If you're a non-technical founder but have an idea for a technical product, then this episode of The Startup Story might just be the very piece of advice and guidance that you've been looking for. Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is The Startup Story. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Startup Story. And before we jump into this episode, I want to give a quick plug about Grindology. Grindology is a brand extension of The Startup Story, and we release a new issue of Grindology magazine every quarter. And every issue of Grindology focuses on a very specific theme that is pertinent to all startups of all stages. And within each issue, we aggregate founder direct resources that will deliver real value and assistance to your entrepreneurial journey. Much like The Startup Story is about providing you with Founder Direct guidance, Grindology provides you with Founder Direct tactics and resources. And every single issue of Grindology is chock full of real tactics from real business builders, not journalists. Within the pages of Grindology, we will be delivering to you tactics and strategies that you can integrate into your business immediately. Our current issue that is available right now is focused on automation, and within this issue, you will hear from a founder that shares how he drove 20% revenue growth automating their email retargeting flows. You will also hear how to leverage automation within your hiring process so that you're not hindered during your season of exponential growth. And you will also receive the actual playbook on how Lyft built their marketing automation platform, provided directly by the senior engineering manager who built it. I'm telling you, founder direct tactics make all the difference in the world, and that is exactly what you will find in this issue and in every issue of Grindology. Like I said, real tactics from real business builders. Get your digital access to all of our issues today by visiting grindologymagazine.com, and of course, we'll include a link in our show notes. All right, now let's jump into this week's episode. Since January of 2019, we have released an episode of The Startup Story every single week. And within each episode, we hear some of the most remarkable stories of resilience, triumph after a horrific loss, and even some painfully honest stories of loss that did not result in recovery. And the reason we share these stories is because I want you to have full clarity on what is in front of you should you choose to take on the entrepreneurial journey. And as the show has expanded its reach, our demographic that we reach has shifted some as well. Within the last few months, I've had some very early stage founders reach out to me with some very specific questions, and many of them have been incredibly tactical in nature. Questions like, what does product market fit really look like? And are Facebook ads still as beneficial to the startup as they used to be? Are subscription-based businesses as great as they sound? And how can I acquire my first 1,000 customers for my SaaS solution? And all these questions are posed to me because I interview some of the most amazing founders on this show. And those questions have really become a driving force for the content and founder direct guidance I provide in the Grindology issues that I spoke about earlier. But because I've been hearing them more and more frequently, I want to start integrating these into the episode release cycle. The challenge is that The Startup Story was not created to be the platform where I am positioned as the sage from the stage, if you will. I want to bring founders to you so that you can hear directly from those who have executed well. So when it comes to some key tactical questions, finding the right expert is not as easy as one would think, because there are a lot of self-proclaimed experts out there. That said, when it came to finding a proven founder to join the show to help provide guidance for my non-technical founders, I know who to go to because he has built an entire career around helping non-technical founders bring their technical solutions to market. So with that said, Neil, why don't you tell my audience a little about yourself and highlight your background for them?
My name is Neil Shaw, and I am one of the co-founders of Think Nimble, a software development agency here in DC that works with early stage startups and social ventures. My background is as a tech entrepreneur. I've been sort of like in and around the tech space for a while, but my particular interest is the intersection between tech and social good. So I started off my career by starting a nonprofit called Social Impact 360. At the time, we called it Compass Partners, but it rebranded a few years later. And it was a nonprofit that worked with early stage entrepreneurs on college campuses all across the world to train them to start their first business. After that, I was hooked, and I knew for the rest of my life I would be an entrepreneur. We worked with thousands of students. We were funded by the Kenneth Cole Foundation. We had programs in 26 universities across the world, and it was just a blast to kind of see how entrepreneurship was so foundational for so many people's lives. After that, I went to go work at EverFi, which is an ed tech company here in DC. I was one of their first product managers, and my job was to build their financial literacy and entrepreneurship education platforms. After that, I started a company called Aspire, which is a HR technology platform. We helped companies provide non-traditional perks and benefits to their employees. We worked with companies like Uber and Geico and Northwestern Mutual. My role there was, I was a CEO, so I did a lot of work around fundraising, you know, all of that. But my sort of like functional area was I was involved in the product team and the engineering teams at our company. And so I spent a lot of time sort of like formulating our product strategy. I did a little bit of coding alongside our CTO, William, and kind of like helped manage the tech project from within. So it was a blast because I got to see both sides of the process there. Think Nimble is a software development agency that works with early stage entrepreneurs. We help companies build the first, second, or third version of the technology that they are trying to build. We tend to focus on social entrepreneurs. So a lot of work in educational technology, healthcare technology, sort of government technologies. And our job is to serve as more than just the technology team. We don't just write code. We sort of provide the wrapper around the code, and we help companies think in terms of long-term product processes, not necessarily just building an app. I always say that, you know, given our varied history, a lot of us in our team are entrepreneurs, and we're building the agency that we wished we had when we were starting our companies. And it's been really rewarding. We've gotten to see startups from all different, you know, in all different shapes and sizes, build technology in a way that sets their businesses up for success, not just one app or one release. So it's been great. Many of our companies came to us when they were, you know, one or two people, and we've helped many of them raise, you know, get their company to the point where they've raised a Series A, Series B, they've scaled to tens of thousands of users, they built internal tech teams, they built internal product teams, and we're sort of the puzzle piece that fits within their company, kind of like, you know, shoring up the gaps in their tech process and their tech knowledge, and hopefully setting them up for long-term foundational success.
That was awesome, Neil. Thanks. Now, it's obvious that you are the right person for this question, so let's jump right into the thick of it. There are so many people out there that would consider themselves a non-technical person. And as the popularity of entrepreneurship increases, more and more founders find themselves in that non-technical category. So with all of your years of expertise in helping this demographic, can you help provide insight into how a non-technical person can move forward with a technical idea or concept? And on top of all that, what are some things that we should all keep in mind when trying to bring a technical solution to market?
I think a lot of people think of technology as being this black box. We hear it all the time where founders come to us and they say, I've got a great idea, a great concept, but I'm just not a tech person, right? And I think that phrase is something that's really important to kind of like break yourself of thinking. Everyone is a tech person. We have phones in our pockets. You know, we've got computers that we're looking at all day long. And we are at the very least active and avid consumers of technology, right? So we all interact with technology in the same way that we all interact with marketing and we all interact with finance and we all interact with businesses, right? We interact with technology. And part of the job of an entrepreneur is to sort of use limited resources around you and sort of like intuition and process to be able to make something happen out of nothing, right? And tech is no different, right? It is, yeah, I think when you look at a computer screen that has code on it, you see all these like words that are a little bit foreign to you, right? And that puts up a wall in people's mind between what tech is and what tech isn't, right? But at the end of the day, you know, the same principles that make your business operate, good effective marketing relies on communication, requires planning, requires sort of like active thought. It requires sort of this iterative nature of thinking. It requires experimentation. All of that also applies to the technology process. And so I think it's really important to just kind of think of technology as one of many functions that you as a founder or CEO are managing. And although you may not be an expert in it, you understand these sort of higher order principles of like planning and communication and thought that allow you to be able to act and work with people who maybe have the functional skill in the area that you're doing. The thing that I like to say is that technology, you know, they always say it's software development. And I think, you know, that sort of reminds me of the phrase research and development. And technology fundamentally is a research and development process. Many people come to us at Think Nimble, they present to us a series of wireframes and they say, how much time will this take to build? And although you can kind of triangulate and figure it out, you can never give an exact answer to it because so much of the software process is managing unknown unknowns, right? If you think of two patterns of kind of development, right? One is a factory style of creation and one is a research and development style of creation. Software is way more in the research and development camp. One way of thinking about technology is, you know, like a series of features with hourly estimates next to them. And you say, okay, if I add all these up, it's going to take, you know, 25 days to finish. But another way is thinking of it kind of like a, you know, a medical research process. You're trying to find a new drug. You're trying to figure out a new drug. And so you don't really know at what point you will have that moment of insight. You don't really know at what point you will uncover the unknown unknown. Software development is way more like that, especially as your project becomes more and more complex, right? And so much of the pattern of tech is managing the process of uncertainty, decreasing variability, putting the thought into the things that you know you can control, and then allowing the space for software developers to be creative and apply their research and development methodology around the work that they're doing. I think a lot of times when founders approach the tech process, there's a lot of things that they don't know that they don't know about the tech process. And so let me run through some common misconceptions that we hear as non-technical founders approach us to build a technical product. First, your product, like your business, is never going to be finished. Many people sort of, you know, they raise a round of funding for their app. Suppose they raise $500,000 and they think about spending that $500,000 to achieve version one of their app. They make a list of features, they make some wireframes, and they sort of present that to a developer, they give them a budget, and they say, I want this to happen, right? That sort of way, that static way of building an app is going to leave you sort of high and dry at the end of it for two reasons, right? One, your job as a tech CEO is not to build an app. It is to build an iterative product development process, the byproduct of which will be many releases and many apps. You will not just build one app, even in the process of building an app, right? You will have your first release, which will test one hypothesis, and your second release, which will test another hypothesis. You may build the back end first and then the front end first. And all of those will be sort of mini releases along the journey of building your app. And so when you're building a tech team or you're building a tech process, think of it fundamentally as a process. And as that process iterates and works over time, it will produce sort of these apps as it goes along. Where those releases happen and how they happen in a good and healthy product development process is almost inconsequential to the idea that you've got that sort of iterative process at the foundation of everything that you're doing. The second thing I think that sort of, you know, keeps people from finishing these sorts of apps is budget. And I think it's really important to think about your budget as being a long-term spend. You know, a sort of cheeky way of saying it is when people come to us and they say, how much money will it take to build my technology for my tech company? The answer is infinity, right? Because once you start building an app for your company, you will never stop working on that app. There is never a company that builds an app, launches it, puts it on a server, and then walks away and can continue to operate their business, right? You will always be iterating based on user feedback. iOS will update a version. You'll have to update your app to be able to match iOS. You will come up with new features, new functionality. Your company will grow and require more scale, and you'll have to, like, you know, manage your servers to be able to handle that volume of work. And so your product will never be finished. And so expect it to be an ongoing cost. Think of it more, even if you are working with a third-party developer or an agency, think of it more like hiring an employee and having that be an ongoing monthly spend rather than being a fixed amount of time that you spend over 6 months or 8 months or whatever. Another thing that we tell founders is that they should test their concept in no code ways whenever they can. And a lot of this relates to the idea that software development is that ongoing cost. So once you start spending on tech, you will probably never finish, right? Until you sell your company or walk away or whatever it happens to be. So the longer you can delay that moment as an entrepreneur, the more money you can save in your tech process. Oftentimes we have companies that come to us and they present to us what we call Excel spreadsheet apps. So they'll come to us and they'll say, hey, I've got this great idea for an algorithm. And it sort of requires someone to fill out a form, type in some numbers, and then we produce a score for them or whatever, right? I can model that out in Excel and I can run a baby version of that without spending any dollars on servers or developers or cost just by using Google Sheets or Typeform or whatever, right? To create a baby version of the app and test the concept. There's no ongoing maintenance cost. There's no development cost. changing a field is just like a matter of minutes in terms of going into type form and, you know, changing it around. That sort of thing allows you to defer and delay the process of building an app until you absolutely need to. There is this J curve of software development where Typeform is never going to scale to tens of thousands of users. It's never going to allow you to build a custom algorithm that powers like multiple apps or whatever, right? But it's good enough to get you to a certain point, to prove a concept, to show an investor that a market exists, whatever it happens to be, right? The further you can get with a low code, no code application, the more likely you are to be able to spend money where it matters on the actual scaling and building of an application at the point that it matters for your business. Founders often also come to us with the question, you know, how much is this going to cost? And I always think of technology costs as falling into two buckets, right? One is the bucket of creating the product, and the other is the bucket of iterating the product, right? And so as an early stage founder, you want to minimize the cost of creating the product, right? But oftentimes that comes at the expense of iterating it, right? So you may like quickly outsource your app, get something quick and dirty up there, right? Launch it as fast as possible. And all that is great, right? Your users may come back to you and they may say, hey, I actually want this feature to be in there that isn't in there right now. And if the cost of putting that feature in to a clunky code base is gigantic and requires a code refactor or a code restructure, right? Your total aggregate cost is going to be large if you consider the total cost of both creation and iteration. So the flip side is also true, right? If you spend a ton of money on creating your app, right? And it's like more expensive than you anticipate, but then adding new features in is just like, you know, a matter of just like a few extra modules or a few weeks of work, your total cost may seem really high, right? For one release, but the total cost over a year or 2 years of kind of maintaining your software goes down. And so neither of them is the right solution, right? At certain points in time, you may want to spend money building a really good foundation. At certain points in time, you want to spend money sort of just getting something out to market as quickly as possible. But in terms of how you should think about costs, make sure you consider the overall creation and iteration costs for your project. If a software developer comes to you and says very specifically, I know exactly how much it will take to build this app, two things must be true, right? One, they must have built that app exactly as it is before, and they must have seen all the different technical patterns that are required, so there are no unknown unknowns. We have built many, many apps over the course of our business. That has never been true for us. We have never found an app that we have exactly built before. There's always some new API, some new structure. You know, part of the reason the entrepreneurs are starting their business is likely because something exactly like it hasn't been done before. And so the technology process sort of reflects that, right? If someone comes to you with an exact estimate of time, they're probably lying, right? They're either trying to close a sale or get some sort of, you know, validation from you and saying that they've done this before. The most effective answers to how much something costs qualify the assumptions by which someone uses to make that estimate. So if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'd like to build an app that shows a bunch of names and it has a search bar on it, a poor answer to it would be, this will cost me 2 weeks of time and it'll cost me $10,000, right? A really good answer to it would be like, okay, I need to sit down and understand exactly what you mean by a list of names in a search bar. There's many different levels of fidelity when it comes to building a search bar. You know, you could type in your name and have an exact text match. You could type in your name, the search bar could accommodate misspellings. You could type in your name, it could split it apart and search just first names and search just last names. You could type in your name and it could search third-party databases to be able to find your name. All of these require different levels of effort. In order for me to give you an accurate estimate, I need to understand what would matter to you for your business and kind of like where you're looking to aim it. When you present a list of features to a developer, that's often the thing that is missing, is like the level of fidelity that's required to be able to make it happen. So if someone gives you an estimate, make sure that they're thinking about that. The second thing that someone usually requires to be able to give an accurate estimate is just managing variability and managing risk, right? So when a developer comes to you, if they answer the question, hey, this is going to take 2 weeks, that's probably not accurate. They're probably just doing that to get you to sign a contract. If they say, I think it's going to take between 2 to 3 weeks, here's my degree of uncertainty around that, and here's why I feel uncertain. I've never worked with this API before. So given what I've seen in the documents, right, like it looks like this API is pretty straightforward and well-structured, but we won't know until we get into it. So the best case scenario is 2 weeks. I would say that like a very likely worst case scenario would be 4 weeks. And so let's aim for somewhere in there, and I'll give you a 3 week estimate right now. And that way you sort of know where that 3 week estimate came from. That's a really good answer. So make sure you're talking in those frameworks to the developers that you work with, because that makes the process a lot more honest. and it's likely to make it so you get a better result out of the software development process you're going down. One of the great things about being a software developer is we tend to have the easy job when it comes to building a tech company, right? Requirements are given to us. We then write that code. They call it a software application because it's an application of software to a real and human problem. Requirements define that human problem. Technology just makes that thing go really, really fast, right? The thing that makes a technology product work or not work is whether those requirements, whether the definition of a human application is really well defined. And if it is, software becomes really easy. So I always tell entrepreneurs that technology is not the hard part. The hard part is figuring out what you want the technology to do. And the more you can do that, and the more you can make it happen, the more likely it is a developer can help you make that problem solve in a scalable or repeatable way.
That was incredible, Neil. Thank you for that. And as we bring our time together to an end, I would love to be able to afford every single one of my listeners a chance to sit with you for a cup of coffee and to get their questions answered directly by you, especially my non-technical audience. But it just isn't feasible at this scale. So with that in mind, if you were having coffee with one of my non-technical listeners who has an idea for a technical solution, what would you say to them?
If I was having coffee with a founder who was thinking about building a tech startup, and we sort of sat down, poured the coffee, and started getting into it, I think the main thing that I would give them advice on, with my limited amount of experience, would be that don't think about tech entrepreneurship as a moment in time. It's not like a flash in the pan. Every entrepreneur that you look up to or you admire, you sort of see the flashy headline. They raised the money, they sold the company, whatever it is, right? But you never see the like 7 trailing years behind that where they worked their butt off and they failed and they tried really hard to make something happen, but then they couldn't, or they, you know, scrapped their first business and started their second. And that's the meat of the story. And that's the meat of what you're going to go to. So if you're thinking about starting a tech startup, you may be the 1% of 1% of people who just makes it happen, leaves and goes to retire on a beach somewhere and has a great life. But it's way more likely that you're going to be in this for the long haul. And you should sort of prepare yourself for that, right? Expect this to be a long journey. Expect entrepreneurship to be more like a career and less like a job. And think of it like that, right? Like, go into each entrepreneurial adventure, think what you're trying to get out of it. And as you leave each entrepreneurial adventure, think about what you gain from it. In the same way that you would jump from job to job and you jump from venture to venture, make sure you sort of have that mentality around it. So my one piece of advice would be that entrepreneurship is a career. It is not a moment in time.
Thank you for all this value, Neil. But how can my audience engage you should they need more direct guidance or expertise to help bring their technical concepts to reality?
If I can help with anything, if you want to talk about a tech project or a tech idea, feel free to reach out. You can reach me at Neil, N-E-I-L, at thinknimble.com. Also, if you'd like to just sit down and meet with one of our developers, it's something that I love to do. Our developers, you know, they think of themselves as CTOs, not just coders. And so as part of that, they love meeting with entrepreneurs and sort of seeing the humans behind the problems that they're solving. We have this program called Office Hours, where you can, every Friday, our developers volunteer a few hours of time to just, you know, clear their schedule and have people come and answer one or two very deep technical questions. You can find more information on our website, www.thinknimble.com. And I'd love for you to participate.
And once you've had a few moments to process all the value that Neil Shaw brought us in this week's episode, please hit me up on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram and share with me your thoughts on this episode. And as far as a call to action, I mean, you heard Neil. His firm offers direct access to his development team to have some of your complex technical questions answered. So seize this opportunity and visit thinknimble.com. And of course, we'll include a link in the show notes for easy access. You know, entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs, and Neil is definitely supporting the entrepreneurial community. And speaking of support, I have a personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible about sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We too are a startup, and word of mouth is everything. So please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Startup Story, or on Twitter at StartupStory_. If you're on LinkedIn, please search for The Startup Story and follow our company page. LinkedIn is a really powerful way to raise awareness of the show. But the most impactful way you can help us grow our audience is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Or if you listen to the show via Spotify, then please simply share the podcast directly from your Spotify app or wherever you listen to the show. These simple actions can make a huge impact in getting these amazing founder stories out to the masses.
And please make sure to tag or mention the Startup Story when you do share so that we can connect with you and say thank you directly. I'm so incredibly appreciative of the fact that you listen to this show each and every week. And I look forward to sharing these amazing stories with you every Tuesday with hopes of encouraging and inspiring you to start your story.